Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. You better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dallas, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Like it, like you like it, like you like it, baby.
All right, all right.
What it is, this is your man King Eric the Assassin, and you are now tuned in to this off-the-cuff radio doubleheader. And this show is sponsored by Screwball Radio, Fleetwood and the Cotpickers, Cocaine's Buddy Boy Entertainment, and Da Vinci Clothing. I got my host T-Max with the facts on the live in the building. What's good?
Man, what it do, man. It's another wonderful Wednesday. You're on that the Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to our co-host of Fair Alive, Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, and of course, DJ Sincere of Dirty Basin Radio in New York. It's alive and direct. And we have Dynamite Dope Double for tonight. It takes us back to the days of partying, 808, rum shaking, and all things bass that are great. The first half of our hour, these two sisters, a lot of people mistake them from coming from Miami, but in fact, they are from Atlanta, Georgia. These two girls, these sisters, instrumental in following in the party footsteps, you know, you could even say MC Light and Queen Latifah with some of the party songs that they did going into the 90s, and especially following in the footsteps of Luke and that whole Miami scene in terms of bringing that rock to really make the body rock. They really, really gave that nostalgia of all things party and when hip-hop was just fun. These two girls, Tanisha and Tashae Bennett, are indeed living legends. But you all know them better as the Dynamite Duo of This and That. And we are so elated to welcome them to Off the Cuff Radio. Ladies!
I'm on board.
Hey, what's going on? What's good? This is Shay Shay from This and That.
Hey. That's right. Welcome.
How you?
Welcome to 572. Welcome to 572. How y'all doing?
Thank you. Doing good. Turning up in the ATL. Turning up. We're doing good. How y'all doing?
We are good.
We
are
marvelous.
Great now that we hear from y'all. Yes.
Yeah, this is going to be a magnificent tale.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Let me tell you, the bass music, I can't wait till it really come back in effect like it was back in the day. But you know what I'm saying? The bass music is that fun, turn up, party music, twerking music. It's all that. It's just all about having fun. Like, I love those days when music was just all about having fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think for a lot of it, you all are part of an exclusive fraternity. You know, shout out to the 69 boys, you know, Van, you know, CC Lemonheads, you know, the whole crew. We had them on earlier in the year. We got 95 South on the second half of this hour show. You all were just as instrumental in terms of coming into that scene because the album you all did, Bumpin', that didn't come out until 1994, but you all did the Who There It Is answer record to 95 South that was released in 93. So you all kind
yes.
of already had laid down the foundation prior to before the album would eventually drop. I mean, we get into it. Boo, tell us about how you know, your sister got into the game. You know, what was it like growing up in the ATL
okay.
in the 90s, especially with Freaknik and everything?
Okay, it's so funny because we actually started off dancing with this guy named, back in the days, he was called MC Rye. So we were dancing in the background for them, and he was opening up for 95 South, 69, 95 South, oh my God, H-Town, and I forgot who else was on the tour back in the day. So we were just playing around. We were like, whoop, here it is, whoop, here it is, basically literally just playing around. A week later, we was in the studio, which that version that y'all played was done, which was a hip-hop version by Bryce Wilson, but the original version, of course, was a up-tempo, more bass, almost just like Boot, Here It Is. I mean, There It Is.
Right.
So we answered it back, took a picture, they sent it to Epic Records, and we literally had a deal in Sony Music within a week.
Oh, wow.
Literally. That's how fast we got our deal on Sony Music, Epic Records. Literally. Like, now, when we tell people that we got a deal on Epic Records, Sony Music, a big label like that, in less than a week, people really do not believe us. But when I mean literally, it was less than a week that we had our deal on a big major label. But our major hit was Party. Our major hit was Party featuring 95, featuring 69 Boys. And then the next hit was Freaky Baby, which was featuring 95 South, 69 Boys, Jay, everybody, like the whole Quad City family was on Freaky Baby. So those two was our major hits. Like, those hits are still played today on the radio.
Man.
What was it like hearing y'all, what was it like hearing you guys, when you, see, people don't understand how this feeling was, like hearing you for the first time on a video or seeing your video for the first time on TV.
Oh, my God. The first time we was at the house, and our friend was like, well, yeah, the guy that worked for the radio station, he was like, we're going to play it soon. So he played on the radio, and everybody was calling us. We was in there dancing to my head. Hey, yo, if you don't want to party, then we was all in the living room. Our friends came over, was like, oh, my God, we heard that song on the radio. You know, there was no Instagram and TikTok and all of that back then. So everybody was coming over to our house. Oh, my God, we heard y'all on the radio. So it was very, very exciting. Like, you have no idea how excited it was back in the day to actually hear a song on the radio, to see your song, video play. You know, it's very, very exciting. Like, it's so different now, of course, but it was just so exciting when we first heard our song on the radio.
I mean, we
and
gotta
even then
like
now,
this.
You know, like next month, we'll be in the car, and somebody will call us and say, y'all song on the radio.
You know, when we think about that era, you know, it's something that, you know, me and my brother, we talk about this all the time. And when we talk to the youngins, because we're older, we're not old, we're older. But when we talk to the youngins and they ask us, you know, we tell them the 90s was one big-ass party. And you could go to anyone you wanted
it
to.
Everywhere.
I mean, you know, if you wanted gangster rap, you could go to the gangster party with Snoop and Dre. If you wanted the bass party, go to Y'all Party or Luke Party or 69 Boys or the whole Quad City or, you know, 95 South. I mean, you know, and if you wanted a, you know, kind of a kickback, I mean, you had So-So Def. I mean, what was it
people
like coming
no
up in that
idea.
Time?
They have no idea how it was going to the Freakney, getting a police escort to escort you from one show to the next show, doing three shows in one day, riding down the strip, girls standing on cars and twerking. We were able to be a part of the Freakney. So it's exciting to look back and see, you know, people like, oh, Freakney. And I'm like, y'all, I was actually, me and my sister, this Nini, this and that was actually part of the Freakney. Like, that's something that I'll always remember. I'll never forget it.
Shout out to Sierra, the former adult star who was with us a few months ago, because she, you know, she was raised in Atlanta, and she was there from the beginning of it in terms of talking to us about how it all started. Tell us about what Freaknet was like in terms of just that era, in terms of just, I mean, the college, they said at its peak, there was at least 100,000 students from all over the country, and even a couple from across the world come through and come down on Peachtree. I mean, just they would just stop traffic, just on that crazy in terms of shooting nobody.
It was basically like, to sum it all up, partying, twerking, standing on cars, streets shut down, traffic can't move, people have to get police escort to get to point A and B, everybody's having a good time, no fights, no shooting, no none of that, everybody, guys sitting outside on top of their cars with six packs of beers and liquor and sitting on top of the cars, girls standing up twerking. I mean, it was just something that you would have to be there to understand it. It was just so fun, and people can try to redo it if it does able to happen again, but it was never be like the original Freakney at all.
Yeah, it's not not in the same vein, because you know you got a lot of people trying to redo it. I think somebody tried to redo it and try to make it family friendly. I'm like, you can't make a family friendly Freakney.
Yeah, well, we were part of it. We performed. Some of our friends did it. They did the Freaknik in Atlanta. We did do it. It was fun. The performance and everything was nice, but it wasn't like before, like the streets being locked down and blocked off and all of that. So it was a big concert. Everybody came out. Everybody dressed like the Freak Neek. It was still fun, but it wasn't like the original Freak Neek. And then last year before last, I performed with 69 Boys, and we did 21 Savage performance Freak Neek, which was fun also. So I had to, I had a chance to perform with 69 Boys on stage with that. So that was fun also.
Mm-hmm. Looking at that era.
So we had a good time.
No, I didn't want to cut you off. I was just saying, look at that era. You all are part of music history. I mean, you were coming along with TLC, Criss Cross, So-So Def was really coming up. Course, Babyface and L.A. Reid with LaFace Records were already going. Toni Braxton was really beginning to get off after she did.
They had the Dungeon Family. They was making a court.
Yeah, they were coming. Yeah, Outkast.
Yeah,
you had so many people,
DJ Taz, Kilo, Raheem, all the Luke, all the bass artists. Like, when I mean, those were the fun days where you can actually go to a club, party, have a good time, no shooting, barely any fighting. It was strictly you're going out to have a good time, to party, no drama, no issues, no nothing. It's girls having a good time, guys having a good time, people dancing, no issues at all.
It was different. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you all when that? Because I remember 1994 when I first saw the video for, Party. And all I remember was just two cute-ass girls just shaking their ass and everybody having a good time. What was it like for y'all to know that, because the video was absolutely amazing. I mean, it caught the essence of that era of Party, literally. What was it like for y'all once it really caught on with everybody? How was it when, like, y'all really knew, like, this was something major that y'all had done?
I think once we went out and we went to Daytona Beach and Epic had paid for a plane to drive around with a banner on the back that said, this and that, Freaky Baby. So when we was driving around in the van, people was running up to the van, was like, oh, my God, that's this and that, that's this and that. That's when we really know, okay, we really made it. When you're just walking the strip and you're just getting outside the van with the van door open and we're giving out this and that stuff and people are running up and they're really like, oh, my God, that's this and that. Can we take a picture with y'all? Can we get a hug? That's when we really realized that we really made it. And it was so much fun, like so much fun.
What was the promotions like?
And even like,
then?
Even.
Go ahead.
Even like just being in Atlanta now, like when we go to a club in Atlanta now, like Atlanta is still like a turn up city. So, with all the strip clubs here in Atlanta, with all the clubs, Atlanta's just a party city. Like you can party literally 7 days a week in Atlanta, literally.
Cool. I tell you, because I need to get back down there because I went down there some years ago as a youngin'. Drove past Selma. I was about to tell my dad, stop the car and just let me out. I will be okay.
Atlanta's definitely a party city.
When you look at that time in terms of the promotions going on, how the labels marketed the music, you talked about how, y'all had the plane, you had the vans, you had the merchandise. When you look at the game today, T, how do you see it from a perspective of how the labels handle record deal signings and promotions as to what it was when you all came up?
To me, actually, I like the way we did it back in the days, because back in the days, it was literally you have to get out, you have to do your street team work. So I like when you get out with your flyers, you have your team with you, they holding up the big, what you call that thing? It looks almost like a fan, like a little promo item with a stick on it. You know what I'm talking about? The big poster with the stick on it. So you had your team following you with that. You got your flyers. You got your T-shirts. You got the. It was more intimate when you're out with your fans and they're coming up to you. Compared to now, you're posting everything on social media. You barely see an artist walk out with a flag or something within their hand to give the, their fans the T-shirts. And it's more like, okay, stand behind the VIP rope, but you're not out on the dance floor with the, with your fans. Like back in the days, you could be on the dance floor with your fans. These days, you're so scared that somebody might try to stab you, shoot you, or something like that. Compared to when we were out, it wasn't really like that. You can go one-on-one with your fan, have a good time, have a drink with them, hang out. Like, it's totally different now. I like back in the days better than now.
Where do you guys think you saw the shift happening?
Huh?
Where you guys think you started seeing the shift happen?
I can't remember when it started shifting, but when it did start shifting over to how it is now, it's like we'll go out and security will be like, no, you can't walk around. And I'm like, hey, we want to get out there and we want to talk to people. I know y'all understand y'all used to do that, but you can't do that now. So, no, y'all have to stay up here. So, you know, it was a little different, and it was kind of hard to get used to that.
It's wild, T, because when we think about it, like King was asking, you know, because, you know, we came up in a time where, like you said, it was so organic in terms of the growth that the artists really had to really, really kind of connect with the audience, which you all did in such a spectacular fashion. You all helped find an era. And what we're seeing now from that time of it, and it's also to the music, journalism, hip-hop is our business, but that doesn't mean we are oblivious to how things are being changed now in terms of the music that's being played. Because back in the day, I've said this, King is on 100 shows, we talked about this, that we listened to everything growing up. You know, we weren't just relegated to one part of hip-hop, and now it's like everything is drill, trap, and it's like these kids don't know the joy of a variety. You know,
it's not fun anymore.
Exactly. And it's like they listen to the same thing over and over again. I'm like, look, there's more than killing and shooting. I'm like, there is such a thing as partying and having a good time without killing and shooting. You know,
and you know what's crazy? It's like the kids growing up, that's what they're looking at. That's what they're listening to. They're not looking at, okay, let's just, you know, go out and have a good time or get the friends together. You know, we're just going to have a good time. No, it's more, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, da-da-da-da-da, and so-and-so, and I'm a freak, and even though we were saying Freak Me Baby and all that stuff back then, but we had to say it clean. We couldn't come out and say the stuff that they're saying now on the radio. Oh, no, never. We couldn't get out and say that back in the days because Epic Records, if we said anything that was too offensive, they would make us, you know, go in and record it over. But now you can say anything.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah. Well, now going back to what you were talking about there, like, was that some of the few challenges that you guys faced being signed to a label in the 90s?
Yeah, our challenge was everything had to be clean. Everything. It had to be like a reverse. If we said something that was out of the way, if it's anything wrong, we had to go back and, okay, radio, I'm going to play that. You got to go back and say this over. Go back and re-record this over. So, yeah, it was definitely a challenge. Like, if we came out now, we would have to just – well, actually, I do. I have a song called That's Poppin', which I recorded with Ra-ENT, which is a real fun bass song. It's just like what we would do back in the days. It's really clean. Not a lot of that cursing, too nasty and stuff like that. And it's really clean, and it's a fun song. And I recorded that from some friends called their label is called Rock ENT. So I basically did that. So that's under Big Shay, Big, and then S-H-E-A Shay. And it's called That's Poppin'. It's all out on all platforms also. So it was just a fun song that I did, you know, just something fun. And, you know, I felt the vibe of, like, back in the day.
When you look at it, especially as a woman in this industry and a living legend at that, how do you feel about some of the new girls coming in the game now, like Cardi, like Megan, who else am I thinking of? Armani Caesar, Rhapsody, Jean Grey, all of them. How do you feel about the new wave of artists, female artists coming out?
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I ain't gonna front. I love me some Cardi. Like I love Cardi. I like Cardi B. Like that's my chick. I love Cardi. Some of the stuff maybe I wouldn't say personally, but me,
right.
I like Cardi B. Megan Thee Stallion and all of them, they're good too, but out of all of them, if I would say that would be my favorite that I would listen to, it would be Cardi.
We love Cardi too.
Cardi,
love
but
Cardi,
you know, there's some
too.
Of the stuff
yeah.
we just, you know, we just couldn't say on music, but yeah, I do listen to Cardi.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes when we come, because the generation we come from, I think sometimes there is a sometimes made an unfair criticism, because at the end of the day, it's all supposed to be fun. If anybody knows,
mm-hmm.
you know, Cardi's story in terms of everything she went through, you know, really to show
mm-hmm.
everybody that she could really do this. And she,
yeah.
you know, always lovingly and affectionately called Cardi the fun ratchet. She's that ratchet friend that will have your ass rolling all over the damn place.
Yeah. Have you, like, she's like, she's so fun to be around. I haven't met her yet, but.
Yes, absolutely.
But you know what? That's what happens is you get on Love and Hip Hop. Once you get on that Love and Hip Hop, which is where she came from, it's easy to get on. Once you
mm-hmm.
get on Love and Hip Hop, if you haven't came up with anything, if you do music to come up and blow up, there's something wrong. Because once you get on that TV network, it's easy for you to, you know, be able to do everything else. So Love and Hip Hop really brought her out. And then it was easy for her to come on the platform to do her music.
Yeah. And it's just something where, you know, there's always this, you know, when we look at how it is in terms of, especially for a woman being marketed, you all will lay the foundation for, like, Lil' Kim, Foxy, Trina,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know, that next wave of
City Girls.
Artists to come. Yes, City Girls. I mean, shout to JT and Young Miami. You know, I mean, they,
yeah,
you know, y'all really, how does it feel to see your influence and your vibe still enduring to this day of knowing that you all really were part of something great? Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I always tell everybody that I would, you know, me and my sister always say we would love to meet. I've been around, of course, the City Girls, but I would love to meet them, you know, like personally, because, you know, we're a duo, they're a duo. I would love to meet them because everybody like, Shay, how can you look like you're in your 30s, like you went backwards in time the way you look. And I said, it's just all about, you know, I don't do no drugs. I drink, I don't do no drugs, and I take care of myself. I work out. So it's just all about taking care of yourself. So when people see me, when I tell them my age, they don't really believe me, but it's just keeping up with yourself. That's pretty much all it is. But, yeah, I would love to meet City Girls.
We're putting it to the universe. This and that, the City Girls remix of any song that got out,
nice.
Or something new and original. We need it. The culture needs it. Yes.
Yes. That would
universe.
Be so nice. The old school mixed in with the new school. That would be hot.
Absolutely. What
mm-hmm.
you said about, you know, taking care of yourself and, you know, staying back from the drugs, you know, we look at that era of the 90s. The most, you know, people
mm-hmm.
were doing was weed. You know,
exactly.
40s was a thing, but we was, you know, and I mean, shit, niggas was not thinking about doing no goddamn pills or coke or none of that. I mean, that was,
and
now that's, I mean, you go on a track.
That's
track,
like, that's like
was,
the going thing with everybody now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't
I
do
mean,
any
was,
of that.
I mean, but you
the only thing that
much,
I do
what,
is hooked on is I love my
mm-hmm.
hookahs. Now, that's one thing I love. I love my hookahs. I own a mobile hookah company called PGE Hookah, and I'm an ATL rep for RR Tobacco. So one thing I do like
okay.
is my hookah, but everything else, no.
In terms of that time for y'all going around and just doing it, to see the game kind of change in terms of gangster rap really becoming a big thing, and to see that next generation, because, you know, of course, like King mentioned earlier, you saw Organized Noize, and then this young songstress who just came out of nowhere. Matter of fact, there were two young talents, and everybody who know they music for trivia know who I'm bringing up next. There was this one dude by the name of Usher Raymond, and then this other superb songstress who was beyond her years by the name of Monica Arnold, who we know as Monica.
Yeah.
I mean, you all were in the history and then seeing the next generation come up. What do people have to understand about what Atlanta meant back then and how integral and important you all are to the musical history of hip-hop? Because some people don't want to give y'all props. This is even before Lil Jon.
Yeah, a lot of people don't.
They'll
give 69 Boys their props, but 95 South and us this and that, we won't get our props as much as the 69 Boys. You know, 69 Boys and 95 South both are out on tour a lot, us this and that. We're not on tour as much as the guys are because, you know, mm-hmm. I have two kids. I have two teenagers now. I'm running my mobile hookah company. I'm filming a reality show called Making It Big in Atlanta. So it's so much stuff that we're doing that we're not just out on the road touring as much as they are. So, right. Like you said, like people like Monica, Usher. Usher's one of her friends of ours. We know Usher real good. We know Monica, but I know Usher a little more than Monica. When I look at all of those artists like that, you know, I love artists like that. I love the music. I love that R&B feel. And music is just so different now.
Yeah. Really now, different. You said you know Usher. How big was that for you all as friends and just as fans of his music and his ATL brethren to find out that he was getting that Super Bowl placement for next year?
I'm excited for him. That was very big. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, that's
the major deal
right there. I mean,
you know he's gonna probably bring Lil Jon out there. He gonna bring back the crunk and dead chain and all that. We need that energy back.
We need all that good stuff back. Yes.
Look, this is what I tell everybody.
That would be super hot.
Man, look, and I tell everybody, because people be asking about do the NFL pay their halftime performers. Okay, well, on Off the Cuff Radio, we'll tell y'all, no, the NFL does not pay the performers. For the publicity, but there are two things that the performers get. They get, number one, publicity, and two, an unlimited budget, because the NFL pays for all of that in terms of whatever their stage show, however they want to do the stage show, NFL says you got an open checkbook. To tell us what you want.
Yeah, because who would turn that down? You wouldn't turn nothing like that down.
Yeah.
Yeah, anybody would do that for free.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And that I didn't know. I'm like, hold up, open checkbook, man. You need to probably bring that whole thing.
Right.
Yeah,
nobody turned that down.
Yeah, but they take care of everything. You know, they don't pay the artists, you know. But, I mean, like, look at the publicity, and they give you the whatever you want to do with the show. Like, when I look at that joint, the 50 Dre, I mean, Eminem, what they did for this, for the game, you know, with the Rams, you know, with the Super Bowl. And, I mean, I saw that stage show was fucking unbelievable. I was like, oh, my goodness. I'm like, in terms of what you all were doing as far as the music career at the time, when did you all know that it was, you know, you all had to, you know, had to be prepared for, you know, other things in terms of your other entrepreneurial endeavors? Tell us how you got into being a spokesperson for the tobacco company that you mentioned.
Okay, our tobacco, basically, you know, social media, you know that Instagram and social media is so popular. So basically in Atlanta, I am basically known as the hookah queen of Atlanta. So I do like all the hot parties. Jock from Love & Hip Hop, I'm his personal hookah person. So whenever he does parties or anything like that, I do the hookahs. I just filmed Love & Hip Hop twice doing hookahs at Jock events. I did pool parties for Lil Scrappy. It's so much stuff. So I'm basically the hookah queen of Atlanta. So they found me on social media. So when they found me, they hit me up and they was like, hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. We would like for you, to send you some t-shirts. So I tried it out, loved it, Skittles, Yummy Gummy, all that, loved it. So after that, next thing you know, I just start promoting. I start taking RR Tobacco to parties, to clubs, and all of that. So I have a big surprise coming out in 2024 with RR Tobacco that I can't mention yet, but that's how I got connected with them. Literally found me on social media.
Okay.
And then in between that, you know, I filmed Making It Big in Atlanta, which is a reality show, which is basically like me as an artist. I started my hookah company. So that'll probably be out around about 2024 also. And I'm also trying to put together a reality show called Hookah Girls of Atlanta. So it'll be strictly about, you know, different hookah girls across Atlanta. And then hopefully if everything across my finger works out, we'll be taking it to different states. And I'll be going, like, to different clubs and different talking to different hookah girls, interviewing them and doing stuff like that. So it's going to be really fun.
If you come to North Carolina, you got to holler.
Yeah, because you're venturing in that lane of content creating. So that expands the brand, too, aside from the music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Man, look, if you come to North Carolina, you got to see King, and if you come to Virginia, you got to see me. We would love to just come there and just show love and support.
Okay, sure. I sure will. So that's what I'm working on. Like I said, 2024 is going to bring a lot of stuff. So it's going to be some good stuff with me with my hookah company, the reality show. So y'all will see in 2024 is coming. We're going to be working in style from, you know, now, you know, coming into the holiday season, slowing down a little bit because of holiday season. Then next year you're going to start seeing different stuff from shapes and this and that.
Man, look.
Yep.
Oh, go ahead, King. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask y'all, and see, in regards to what you guys doing, you're going on tour with, when you don't hit these club scenes and stuff, with you guys being your brand Captivator, putting out party music, how challenging was it for you guys to get off during the pandemic? Because, you know, everything was shut down. Nobody could really move, but yet your music was based off partying and touring. So how you guys was able to you know, coexist with your movement and moving forward?
Yeah. So basically, you know, it was all social media. So, you can get on live with people. You can have fun. You can have your music in the background. You can talk to different people. You can say, hey, we're going to, like, call a couple of my friends. We're going to see who got the best party in the house. So stuff like that is little stuff that we were doing still. So that worked for us. And then here in Atlanta, the bowling alley that I was doing hookahs at was still able to be open for a while. And then bowling alley was the first one to be reopened again. So with me doing the hookahs, I was able to, in the daytime, I had hookahs. People would call me, oh, my God, we can't go to the club. I want to smoke a hookah. Oh, my God, I want to smoke a hookah. So I was still able to go out and deliver hookah, deliver shisha to people. And then, you know, you had to be in the house by a certain time. So it was still bad, but it was still good at the same time.
Mm-hmm. In terms of artists, because entrepreneurship, in terms of doing music, in terms of running a label, being a producer, all of it's entrepreneurship because it's all about you taking it upon your own to do it. What do artists need to understand from your extended and extensive and excellent entrepreneurship skills? What do artists need to understand about how to diversify their income? Because back in the day, especially being if you had a hustle back and outside of music, that was a bonus. Now today, that's almost a necessity to have a second source or even a multiple streams of income. What do artists need to know about that education of how to diversify their brand in so many different areas?
Now, this is what I would tell all artists now. All artists now, number one, make sure attorney look over your contract. That's number one. Number two, make sure you know the music business. Make sure you know your business. Make sure you know what percentages you're supposed to get. Number three, watch your money. Number four, don't spend your money partying, buying sections, and doing all other stuff. Take your money and invest your money and open up something. If you can't open up something, do a website, do a store, do something. But open up a business. Don't just get this money. Don't get this show money and spend it and blow it. And also, artists, get out there and go to these DJs and take the music, your DJs, to the DJs yourself. Don't just hire somebody and say, hey, go out and send my music out there. Pop up at these clubs. Talk to these DJs.
What was it like for you all during that time in terms of, and we're not asking you to give up how much y'all were getting paid during the shows during that time or whatever, but what was it like in terms of the money, in terms of how artists were getting paid, in terms of this? How the finances were taken care of and how deals were done in compensation as opposed to today. We look at the 360 deals where now these labels are getting some of the tour money, which back in the day was taboo because that was the artist money. How do you see it changing now in terms of how artists are getting paid as opposed to how y'all got paid back then?
Okay, now back then we were signed to a major record company, so the label was taking care of like our bills, like our rent, all of that stuff like that, tour buses.
Oh, man.
They were taking care of a lot of stuff. So basically us as an artist, we didn't really have to do too much. Our show money and all that stuff, the money we were keeping. But when it came to actually rent and all of that stuff like that, back then we did not have to worry about that. Now, with, you know, more independent record companies and stuff like that, it's a little different. But back then, we did not have to worry about bills. That's one thing I can say. Sony Epic Records took care of us.
I'm sitting here with my mouth dropped because we've never heard of all the 572 shows on Off the Cuff Radio we've been blessed to do. We've never heard that from an artist say that the label literally paid for everything. We've never heard this. This is a first.
The label, when I mean to tell you, Epic got us tour buses. When we was on promo tour, we was getting per diem. Like, we had, I can say, I did not have no issues being on Epic Records. We loved that label. When we were on that label, we loved that label. There were no issues. There's no complaints that I can say anything bad about Epic at all. We had sponsors from Nike, Adidas, and we were, I mean, they had us on stuff that we, stuff with like TLC, Lady of Soul Awards nominations, all types of stuff. Like, Epic really treated us good. I can't lie about that. They really did.
Once again, I'm still sitting here in stunned silence. I'm sitting here in stunned silence. Because it's like, you know, you hear these
people can't believe it.
Yeah, and people talk about, man, my label fucked me, I ain't get my money, and you know, like, you know, and then we're hearing these stories from y'all, like, y'all is living it. Sponsorship.
And when I need to tell you, we Epic treated us very well. I'm not gonna lie. Very well. I cannot say anything bad about Epic Records. If it was something that we were short on and we call our A&R back then, hey, we got y'all. What y'all need? Okay, we got it. Of course, they'll take some of it back on the back end, which is fine with us.
Right.
You know, as long as we need it, we got it.
And that's what
we had no issues about that.
Yeah,
we hear so many disgruntled stories about these labels for many artists. So this is a fresh look right there. Like, you got some people, some labels that actually do their part.
The label did their part. I will not lie about that. Epic Records did their part. It was called Epic Street. They did their part. I will not lie to you about that. They really did.
Man, shout out Epic Street during that time especially, because that's where Kool G Rap actually released his debut album on 456, you know, Epic Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are definitely one of the unsung labels in terms of hardcore hip-hop, in terms of who was, you know, there during that time. So in terms of so the record obviously does great. What were the negotiations like in terms of the talks for the second album? What was going on with that, and what happened with that?
Okay, so what happened is Epic Records, they did send the letter out. We got the letter that said it was time for us to do our second album.
Mm-hmm.
So never talk anything too much bad about anybody, but within the team, the family, the Quad City family, that's the reason why the second album did not come out, or we go to the studio to record the second album, because it was stuff within the Quad City family why we never went back in the studio. So we were kind of upset about it, like, oh, we got this deal, we got this letter, we're ready for the second album, what's going on? I can't talk too much on it, but yeah, that's the real reason why this and that never came back with the second album.
Now, we're not going to ask you to name no names or just bash anybody. We don't do that off the cuff. But when you look at how some of these labels, we look at what's happened over the years, and we've seen the stories. We've seen what happened with Rockefeller. We've seen what happened with Death Row. You know, we've seen what's happened with a lot of labels where there was a lot of internal conflict, and it ended up kind of dissolving it from within. When you get into the game like that of music and how things change for some, what do people have to understand about the music industry in terms of the business aspect and how things could change with the people involved?
I can't really say too much on I can't speak too much on that right there. Yeah, I can't really
Understood.
Yeah, I can't really speak on that, yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. Understood. Understood. Yeah. You know, we just, you know, we just hear a lot of stuff go out. You know, some people, like, and we can only say this on air because this has been all been documented with the death row situation. Mm-hmm. This has all been documented. We all, everybody knows the story to a degree. You know, when Dre left, you know, because Dre said it just started getting crazy. You know, in terms
what was going on,
and you know, Dre was like, all these random niggas coming up in the studio that he don't know, and it's like, boy, what's going on here? You know,
like the energy,
man.
You start random people start coming in, and they can't take focus off the art, so to speak. You can't let the art get too focused when you have all these tag alongs coming in. That's why you got to keep your circle intact. You got to keep a strong circle intact in this game.
Yeah, so, yes, this thing, you know, went on, and that's the reason why we didn't get the second album. It was disappointing, but, you know, it is what it is, and still happy the time that we were out there, you know, doing the music and stuff. And then the single, like I said, the single that's popping, you know, when I went to the studio and recorded that, you know, I just did it for fun. I was like, they was like, hey, Shay, record. I was like, I don't really want to do music no more. But I don't know if y'all heard it yet, but, you know, it was a fun song.
Yeah, we saw, I think you made a video for that, didn't you?
We didn't make a video for this popping yet. Mm-mm.
Okay, I have not made a video for. Okay, just want to make sure. Yeah, but I mean, that's something, you know, but like you said, you know, y'all were disappointed in terms of what had happened. As some artists, they get disgusted with the industry to where they don't want to do anything anymore. How did you all find that motivation to get back in the game and say, you know what, we had a setback, but we're ready to get back?
I'm not going to lie. It was hard. After we went through that, oh, my God, we had a whole second album deal. Like, what's going on? How did this inside family mess that up? Like, oh, my God. It was depressing for a while. And then people were still calling us to still do shows. So we were still doing shows, but we just never got back to the point where we just went back in the studio and ever recorded another dissonant album. But it was very hard. I'm not going to lie. It was hard. Hard to have to go back. We were young. We didn't invest our money. So it was hard. So we went back and start doing, you know, jobs to make money to be able to pay the bills and stuff like that. And now when I look back and I'm like, oh, if I would have took all this money and open up this and do that and do that. So all artists need to invest their money in something. Now, like you said, I'm like I was telling y'all, I do the hookah business, mobile hookah, which is, you know, good. And I travel. I've been to North Carolina doing hookahs. So, and then it goes into reality TV. I've been on Love and Hip Hop on Scenes with Jock before. So it just goes into ventures of doing other things now besides the music.
Man, but that's important though, because one thing about it is that, you know, artists out there, in terms of how people only see one side of it. And that's the thing, the illusion people have. That doesn't mean you don't make a, you know, killing. We interviewed Uncle Hayes from PAC a couple of years ago, and he told us about, you know, some of the hard times he hit, you know, because when you get that kind of money and you're getting it fast, you know, and, you know, it's like, once again, like what happened with MC Hammer. Everybody knows about that situation, you know.
Yeah.
When you're getting it like that, you think it's going to be there forever. Hammer made like $30 million in the 90s. This is 90s money. He had $30 million. You know,
right, so
you
imagine how much
you
would be making if he was out now.
It was hard.
It was so hard because you would be working and somebody would see you and be like, oh, that's a girl from this and that. Why is she working? And da-da-da-da-da-da. And so-and-so. You get people picking on you, talking on radio and all of that stuff. But let me tell you something. When somebody came on me and said that, I said, at the end of the day, my bills need to get paid. And this is what I'm doing. You got an issue with it? You know? So that's how I look at people when they start coming to me. I was like, I'm gonna get my check regardless, whether I'm doing music or not doing music. So it was hard, but we got to do it.
Yeah, at least on top of that, at least it's legal.
Yeah, like day to day, I'm working. I'm running clubs. I'm a general manager at a club, so I don't care if I'm working, because guess what? I'm making money off that section, whatever this whole total club make. I get a percentage off of this. So, yes, I am the general manager of the club. So, and I had no issues with it either.
Another reason we need to get down to Atlanta.
Yeah, I said, especially with the way things are now, with how this, how streaming is taking a core with your royalties and your money and your sales, you gotta have a couple. You gotta have a couple gigs on deck.
You sure do. You sure do. And I don't mind. Everybody know me. Oh, Shapin, is that what's your hookahs? Mm-hmm. Yes, I sure do. That's my thing. I tell them in the heartbeat.
Always,
they know.
And that's always a beautiful thing when you're able to find, you know, the next thing in your life, you know, because you don't want to necessarily, you know, it's like, it's something I saw on IG today, and it was Woodstocker Snoopy, and it said, autumn is a sign that change is beautiful. And sometimes change is beautiful and necessary. So it showed that even with the adversity you hit, it didn't stop your hustle. It didn't break your spirit. And most importantly, you persevered and are thriving to this day. And that says a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you said you're general manager of the club. Go ahead.
And it's good to do something that you like. Like, I literally like doing hookahs. Like, I'm doing something that I like doing. So if I'm not doing the music, which I love, I still love performing and doing music, but I love my hookah company. I love it. I have a good time, and I have no issues with it. And you know, everybody, either one of the two, they know me from this and that, or they know me from Shay TGE, the hookah queen of Atlanta.
Look, you said you're general manager of the club. That's another reason King and me, we need to get back down to the A, because we got to come see you, because it's like, I mean, how has Atlanta over the years managed to maintain that party? I mean, in the 90s, it was fucking insane. And it's still insane to this day. What is it about y'all out
it
here?
It still is. Because, see, Atlanta, Atlanta is able to keep everything up. It's number one, Atlanta has a lot of strip clubs in Atlanta. Number two, Atlanta, where we used to... Yeah, Allure, all those strip clubs, and where Atlanta, you think, okay, just the club, Atlanta turned into lounges. So the difference between a club and a lounge is smaller, it's more intimate, it's not really fully a dance floor most of the time at lounges. You're smoking your hookah, you got your bottle, you're in your section, people are standing up on couches, so it's a whole vibe. So the vibe turns from a beat club to a dance floor to a smaller lounge setting, and everybody's in their section dancing, sitting on couches, having a good time. So that's how Atlanta's able to keep up. The club scene, big club scene went away, went down, to guess what? Now we're doing lounges. So I have literally been to lounges that no bigger than take two sides of your living room and times it times two and put some couches in there and some tables and get you some bottle sparklers and stuff and bring those out and the hookahs out, and it's a whole big experience, and it might only hold 50 people.
Okay, T, because you were there when they started moving crazy and like really blowing the clubs up on another level. Tell us about your club experience when BMF first got on the scene and they started running Atlanta on the club scene.
See, most of the time when I was out and I seen them, it was a lot of times I think at like the strip club. I don't know too much about that scene because I was in between Miami. I was living in Miami then. So I was in between Miami and just getting to Atlanta kind of. So I didn't know too much about that. But for some of them that I do know, hanging out at clubs and turning up and in the strip clubs, but I don't know too much about them because I was back and forth from Miami around about that time.
So let's ask about Miami, Slip and Slide, Trina, Trick Daddy, the whole like new wave of all that. What was that like to watch that Miami scene? Some guy, you know, by the name of, you know, DJ Khaled was really beginning to get his name out there. What was that like during that time in Miami?
Oh, my God. Miami was such a good time. Hanging around Luke, I was in the Scar video. I was in two or three of his videos. The dancing, the dancing and having a good time. Trick, that's my buddy. That's my buddy. I think I talked to Trick yesterday. Hanging out with Trick, hanging out with Luke and them, going to parties, having a good time, going to shows. Oh, my God. When I mean to tell you, I love Miami South Beach. I love Miami South Beach. Like, love it. Like, I would love at this point in time, I'm going to get to the point where I'm going to have a second place in Miami. Like, I love Miami.
I mean, that Miami, I mean, that second scene of what was going on, that, because Luke, shout out to Uncle Luke, got to meet him in person a few, couple months ago. Really good dude, solid guy when he came to Virginia. I mean, people got to understand what Luke has done for hip-hop in terms of fighting for our First Amendment rights. A lot of people forget that. He's a hero to the culture. And he was still doing it going into the 90s. I mean, you know, with Scarred, I mean, Luke Sheila, I mean, Raise the Roof. I mean.
Yeah, I was in Scarred video.
Yeah, that's where we first
saw. I was in Scarred video by
the
pool table and stuff. We shot it in California.
Okay. And what was that like?
Oh, my God. Scarred video was so much fun. They had the actors in there. It was so much fun. We stayed in Cali for like 3 or 4 days. It was fun. Oh, my God. Going to Luke shows and Luke, matter of fact, I talked to Luke 2 days ago, too, because he was here in Atlanta. Going to Luke parties is just a whole different experience. Like, they're fun. A lot of dance and a lot of energy. It's really fun. Like, those are like my really close friends. Like, yeah, Trick. I know Trina, but I don't know Trina as much as I know Trick. So, like, hanging out with Luke and them, like, that's the fun days. That is really the fun days.
And what about Rosé, the boss Rick Ross? Did you come across him when, you know, he made his ascent on the Miami scene?
Rick Ross, I don't know Rick Ross. I don't know him like that. Of course, I've been to his parties, the Bel Air and all of that stuff, but I don't physically know Rick Ross like I know Luke and Trick and Jock and all of them and Scrappy and all of them. Mm-hmm.
Understood.
And, like, if you look at my Instagram, you'll see the fun experience from Jock's party. He had the big birthday party at the City Hall the other day, so I was part of that. RR Tobacco, we sponsored Jock's party. We gave away VIP bags. So if anybody wants to see that experience, if they go to my Instagram, it's Shay, S-H-E-A-P-G-E. So Shay P-G-E, if you go to the Instagram page, you'll see the fun experience from, like, Jock's birthday party.
S-H-E-A-P-G-E?
S-H-E-A-P-G-E.
Got you. Okay, because I'm going to follow.
You'll see the experience of Atlanta, the life of Atlanta.
Yeah, man. I mean, but okay. So, what else is there? There's got to be a book coming. You, this is all too good. You've got to put this in a book.
You know what? Everybody tell me to do a book. They was like, Shay, you have experience, and they was like, I don't know how you do it to be able to experience stuff from back in the days to then be able to experience what the younger people are experiencing now with the love and hip hop. You're around people that people would pay to be around. Like, on a regular day, I may be out hanging out with Jock and them on Tuesdays at the club at Boogaloo. Scrappy will show up. I did some promotion, Chaotic, for Love & Hip Hop. Like, these are people that, you know, people really would love to see. But if you go on my Instagram, look down my Instagram, you'll be able to stroll down the experience of me being able to hang out with back in the days with Luke and this and that days, 95 South to 69 Boys to up to date now with Love & Hip Hop, hanging with the Love & Hip Hop crew and all of that. And it's fun. Like, my life is, everything that I do is fun at this point in time because I'm doing what I love to do.
That's so important. You know, we've seen a situation, especially for a lot of our people, especially in this game. The 90s, there was conflict. Tupac and Biggie were the most notable. Not the first casualties in hip-hop, but they were the most notable because we saw the implications of what beef really could bring in the most deadly sense. Even with Luke and Dre and Snoop, and they're all good with each other now. We don't even know how the hell that happened in terms of them niggas having problems with each other. But it's like You know, but it's like, but we never felt at that point that there was actually going to be someone getting killed behind it. You know,
right.
That was just something, you know, in the 90s, you know, there was issues, but, you know, it really had to be some shit where somebody was going to get off behind it. When you look at the game today of how you all partied and how the scene is today, what is your prayer, what is your wish for the new generation in hip-hop and the music and the culture to really understand about what this means, what the responsibilities
right.
are, and most importantly, how to live without the drama losing your life?
Right. Number one, I would say stop the violence. That's number one. Number two,
uh-huh.
I really think that African-American people should team up together. If everybody team up together and think about more of helping each other and more of having fun and getting together and throwing big events, helping the homeless, helping people who's down and out, and you know, all these people that have so much money and all these homeless people in the wintertime that's sleeping on side of the streets and it's cold outside and they're freezing, sitting in tents, and people are sitting on thousands of dollars where they can go buy one big building and put some beds in there for people to sleep on, something like put together and help people. And I think it would be better if people help.
Absolutely. And you know, that's something that I think a lot of times people get lost on, because at the end of the day, the music mm-hmm. is fun, but it's also about how we can really reach each other in a way that everyone has a good time. That's what this culture in
mm-hmm.
this 50th year, you know, 2023, which has been so tremendously awesome. We've seen a true celebration, a true milestone reached. And we're
mm-hmm.
part, we are proud to be part of it as podcasters. We're proud to have you on as a living legend, you know, in terms of
mm-hmm.
you telling your story from the experiences. And people got to understand at the end of the day, this is about music and fun. This isn't about violence and death.
Right. It's about, let's make it fun again.
When you look at what it was back in the day coming up, what were the criteria for an artist to get in terms of how they got a deal? Because now with social
mm-hmm.
media, we're seeing it where these artists are doing it themselves. Doesn't mean some of them are good at it. They just like, well, I can do it myself and get on. And some of them are getting
yeah.
on, but they're not great at it.
Back then,
I'm
gonna say they were looking for looks. Like back then when we were coming out, we got our deal more off the looks than the music. If you were small in shape and you're a female, your music didn't have to be all that good, because basically what they're going to do is they're going to put a good track behind you, some good music, good production behind you, and they're going to blow you up because they want you to be in shape. So then if you're not in shape or you're a little bit in shape, then you got to work out just a little bit to stay in shape. But if you're in shape and you were nice looking back in the days, pretty much if you sit back and think of most of the women that was out back in the days, am I right or wrong, they were in shape. Sit back and think. Most of the women back then, they were small and petite, but they or nice size, but they were in shape. Labels back then, you had to be in shape for them to pick you out, because it wasn't no, you couldn't get surgeries and all of that stuff back then. Like now, a label say, hey, I want you to have some big boobs. Oh, okay, I'm going to give you the money to help you. Okay, let me go do this. Okay, let me go do this tomorrow, next week. Compared to back then, we literally had to go run up and down steps, run up and down hills, do sit-ups, do this, to stay in shape. So it was easier for a female if you were in shape to get a record deal back then. You didn't have to know how to sing that good. You didn't know how to rap that good. It's just that production they put behind you, you would sound like you would look like a superstar and sound like one.
But I mean, but that's always been an element about the music industry in terms of how things move, because it was always about the image. And there was always something that, for what it was at the time, that they were able to really, really sell. You know, it's even today, you know, when we look at, okay, I'm not gonna be, I don't want to be that guy. But when I look at some
mm-hmm.
of the girls today, I mean, they don't compare to y'all. They don't compare to y'all.
Yeah. Back then, not to talk about anybody who have surgery. I never would talk about anybody, but. We had to work for that back in the days. We had to work out. We literally had to go out there and jog and do all of that stuff to stay in shape. There was none of that that's going on now back then.
Mm-hmm.
At all. We had to work out. We had to work out 3-4 days a week.
Oh, wow. I mean, was that just something?
Yeah,
that you
had to
all
stay in
hit,
shape.
Or was that
yeah.
kind of... But,
definitely had to stay in shape back then. The Epic was not playing about that staying in shape.
Yeah, man. But I mean, that's we think about that point though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
that was definitely
the thing back in the day to stay in shape. But like I said, I just missed the fun day. So make sure, like again, if y'all haven't heard That's Poppin', make sure y'all check that out.
Yeah, we definitely gonna play that after the interview for sure.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate
it. We're going to play that record for you for sure. And one more thing, do you care to tell us about what you have going on with any up-and-coming tour dates and shows?
Okay. We do. We have a show coming up October the 6th. I think it's North Augusta. It's like with Dougie Fresh, 95 Style, 69 Boys, and a lot of other artists. That's coming up October the 6th. If you want to look on my Instagram or the real This and That Instagram, you can get the information about that show. Again, get ready to look out for Making It Big in Atlanta, a reality show that I'm going to be on next year. That's going to be coming out. It's called Making It Big in Atlanta, working on Hookah Girls of Atlanta. And just a whole bunch of things that's going to be coming out real, real, real soon, 2024.
Shay, this has been unbelievable. We love you. We love the contributions your sister made to the culture. We love everything you're doing. You're welcome back anytime. We cannot thank you enough for this. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank y'all for having me.
Already, and the song we about to play for you now, Rock With It. We about to play with it, play it now. We on hour number 2 of as a part of this doubleheader. We thank you once again, Shay, for chopping it up with us, and we're going to definitely support your brand.
Thank you. And y'all, thank you guys for having me, and I want y'all to check out me, Big Shay. That's popping.
No
definitely. Give everybody your info one more again on the social media so everybody knows where to find you before you dip. Give everybody your info again.
Okay. So me, Shay Shay from This and That, my Instagram is SHEAPGE, and the This and That Instagram is The Real, DISNDAT. Y'all check us out. Follow her, and I'll follow back.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, y'all have a great night.
Yes, ma'am. You too. Be blessed. Thank you again. We can't wait to have you back on. Thank you.
Okay, you too.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
King. Bye-bye. King, set us up for the next one.
All right. We're going to take a little music break. This is Rock With It from Shay from This and That. And we're going to have 95 South coming on at hour number 2. Let's go.
see, so that's easy access to the heat. Riding in my Chevy, so fresh, so clean. We ride foes, even you best believe we're doing the dope boy lean. And I represent for them Chevy boys from coast to coast. I just country boy clown with drove in the wind and put my gas to the flow, cause when I
ride in my Chevy, I got that bump, bump, bump. And I already got a full tank. See, I put my Chevy way up in the air. Them 26 are so safe. And I'll catch a quick charge in the summer. No more even think about scratching up a pace. You wanna ride in my Chevy about every single day. But baby, that ain't the way it's gon' go. If you see me in my Chevy with one of my baby mamas, then you know you gotta keep us on the low. Cause they all off fast, quick to bring it to you. And you don't need quick to come out there first. And plus I'm already asking for child support. And I'll need you to make it no worse. Why you can act?
Give a fuck.
Yeah. We back live and direct with this hour number two of this dope doubleheader of Off the Cuff Radio. Those records we just played were 95 South, Chevy, and After Party. T-Max is live with me, live and direct.
Yep. And we're back for round two of the Through and Through on OTC on the Fantastic Frequency. King, let everybody know who we got for the second hour.
Yes, sir, man. Representing the MIA scene, the hard way, and still doing it in solid fashion to tell us about any up-and-coming shows, new music, projects, content, or whatever they have producing and forthcoming. And here to tell us about their musical journey to lead up to this point, we all want to welcome 95 South to Off the Cuff Radio, episode 573.
Jip. What's up? What's up, brother?
What's happening?
This your boy Mike, and your boy Daddy Black up in the house, baby.
Bad boys.
What's up, man?
Man, we just had too much awesomeness of legends on this show. I don't know what we're gonna do with ourselves. I mean, man.
Hey, man. You know what? Thank you guys for having us. Thank you guys for thinking of us. You know, man. You know, it's been a long journey. We 30 years in this thing. You know, and it's a beautiful thing to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, so we're just grateful to be a part of it, and just it's always been a privilege to make a contribution to something so amazing, bro.
Dude, we cannot thank y'all enough for all the good times and rump-shaking music that y'all provided us for many cookouts, school dances, just get-togethers in the hood. this is like, you know, Kobe meeting Jordan. This is like, you know, I mean, this is like the youngin' coming in meeting the legend. You know, we grew up listening to y'all. We have so much respect for what y'all did in that second generation of Florida music, following behind, you know, Luke, of course, the Southern in general. You know, Kid Money, Splat Pack, you know, Jam Pony. Mm-hmm. You all have made an indelible, incredible print on not only Florida hip hop, but hip hop in general. We got to get right to this. Tell everybody about yourself, how y'all got started, and the journey along the way. Let's get it.
Well, first of all, you know, I've known Daddy Black all his life, right? Because I remember when my mama brought him home from the hospital, right? Because we're brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when my mama brought him home from the hospital.
That's what's
So I've been knowing him all his life. He ain't been knowing me all my life, but I've been knowing him all his life. and Daddy Black would like to say, people, he say, we came from the same womb and we shared the same room. So, yeah. So
right.
That's how I know him.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And honestly, my introduction into the music industry was through my big brother, Mike, you know, because, again, he's always been a true artist at heart. You know, he played an instrument in high school. He could draw. He was a great illustrator, dope songwriter. So my introduction into music was through him. But also, I started out dancing for a group that he founded with some other guys called the Chill Deal Boys. And with Jay McGowan, Marcus Anthony, and Nathaniel Orange, which was pretty much the foundation for everything that we've done thus far. So definitely, you know, I started as a dancer behind Mike, which was my big brother. And from there, we went into doing 95 South.
So you all come along at a time where, of course, Luke is just totally just started a nationwide phenomenon. And you all carry on the tradition. You know, 69 Boys, this and that, you know, all of you are connected in that generation. As we were talking with T earlier, the 90s was just one big ass dance party. Let's just admit it. And you all part of the soundtrack for it. What was it like in terms of you all getting together to really decide this is what you want to do? And what were those sessions like that would come, you know, for y'all debut album?
Well, as far as our debut album, we didn't have time to think about nothing, right? Because we came up with the concept one Sunday night. And
mm-hmm.
by the next Sunday afternoon, the album was done. All songs were recorded, and it was mixed and ready to be mastered. So we really didn't have time to think. And I think that's what makes artists, their freshman albums, so dope, because they don't have a box. They don't have a blueprint.
Right.
They just go in the studio and do whatever they feel like it and do whatever their heart tells them to do. It's that sophomore album and the junior album where now you got labels and people telling you, you need to make a song like this. You got to make a song like this. Man, we didn't care. If you was in the studio with us when we were recording that first album, you got on the record. We didn't care who you was.
But unfortunately for us, everybody we had around us were talented in some form or fashion. So it just made the project that much doper.
Man,
yeah, that's what happened. You're in that second and third album, then, because you know the game changes within album breaks, and then by that second or third album, they'll probably come at you like, "Oh, we need y'all to make a record like Kendrick Lamar. We need you to make a record like Drake or something."
Right. Right,
man.
And I think that was a part of the frustration that initially, you know, started to kind of rock the boat a little bit, you know, because again, CC Lemonhead was just a phenomenal producer, and this guy didn't have any restraint. There was no holds barred. He went in and did what he did. But by the time he got to those major labels, you know, they were sending the records back to him. Well, it don't sound like this record, or it don't, you know, you need, and that I think started the initial frustration, because he had never, ever had anybody question his creative control, you know, so that kind of threw him for a loop. But outside of that, you know, we just kept it to what we loved, and that's what it is, bro.
When Who There It Is dropped, I mean, that was one of the undeniable hits of 1990. I mean, that shit rocked all fucking summer. I mean,
yeah,
when we think about some of the albums released between 1992 and 1993, you know, Dr. Dre's A Chronic, late 92, and it runs all the way through 93. Wu-Tang drops in spring of 1993. You All dropped in 1993. Compton's Most Wanted, I think, Music to Drive By dropped in 1992-93. I mean, it was just nonstop. Cam's Never Again. So this was a perfect blend of hip-hop from all over. I mean, Threat, Sick in the Head album, Shout to Him, you know, I mean, the West Coast, East Coast, Down South, all of you had a shared space of tremendous talent and contributions to the culture. So much so that between 1992 and 93, some would say 95, if you extend it further, you all ushered in the second golden age of hip-hop. Did you all know the type of impact you were going to make at that time in terms of what you all did?
No, I was just hanging out with my little brother, my best friend, Jay Ski, CC, my best friend, JC's little brother, AB. I was just hanging out with my friends and making jokes in the studio, and CC just happened to put on a beat and I could happen to write rhymes. And no, we didn't know none of that. We just hanging out, just since we can make a little money to feed our children, man. That's all we were doing, man. That was all.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I never
knew, and sometimes I still don't really, can't fully grasp the, you know, just the whole impact of, you know, what our contribution did in the industry. But I'm grateful, bro. I'm grateful.
And one more album, because I'd be remiss, you know, we'd be remiss if I mentioned this, Loops in the News, when that dropped in 93. You know what I mean? That was, man,
yeah.
Shout out to Uncle Luke, man. I mean, that was.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing about it was, like you were saying, bro, in the 90s, around that time, 92, 93, so much good music dropped, and everybody had their own lane, and everybody sounded different.
Yeah.
And everybody ate.
everybody
absolutely.
You know what I'm talking? But being on the road on our first tour, Luke put us on. I mean, we was listening to Onyx, we was listening to, like you say, Dr. Dre, we was listening to all 8-Ball, MJG, we was listening to all those cats. But and everybody was eating, and everybody had their own lane, and that was the beauty of it for me.
When we think about that era, guys, we're thinking about an era where, of course, we've said this on so many shows, how the politics of the gang were different. We're going to get into what it was like in terms of the actual process of you all getting signed, in terms of what was going on with that. But when we think about the radio play back in the day, the DJs really had the power to play what they wanted. There was no corporate entities. It was really about a song organically getting shipped out, shipped to the DJs, played on the radio, and how the people responded to it. We talked about how our generation and this generation, because now everything is just fucking every same song every 5 minutes, where back in the day, we listened to everything, R&B, gangster rap, party rap. It was a variety that helped enrich our musical education, and it broadened our horizons to let us know there was not one particular genre. What was it like in terms of the marketing back in the day for you all, and especially when you all knew that you all had a hit once it took off?
One of the most fun times I've ever had was when we got in that van. Remember that, Carlos? We got in that van, and we drove from Miami up to New Jersey, hitting every record store, every radio station we could possibly come across. In a van. And just, I remember taking it to some radio station. And by the time we got back in the car and we're driving down the highway, we're hearing the song on that radio station. And that was just, it was just crazy, man. It was just crazy. Or, you know, we doing a show in that city, giving such a good show, that you check the sound scan and how your record sales and radio play went up in that city the next day that you left because you did a good show. You can't beat that, man.
Yeah, and for me, it was just watching how everything happened, because there really wasn't a blueprint on how you marketed our type of music. It was something new, so the record label trusted us enough to give us an Astro van. I think it was $10,000 check for promo and a bunch of cassettes and wax and some T-shirts. And they gave us these little buttons, too. So we had a little bit of marketing material. So we just hit the road, and we just kind of followed the blueprint, I think, that was kind of pretty much laid down from Chill Deal. And the beautiful thing about it was, we still maintain a lot of those relationships from when the Chill Deal boys were having a regional success in the United States. You know, their records was, and this is a group that I danced for, so they would have, you know, success in Houston. You know, I remember going out to San Diego doing shows, Dallas, very prevalent in like Tennessee. So the record was hitting these pockets. So we still had relationships in those areas. So when we came back through at 95 South, that played a huge role. And then, and just the record label allowing us to do what we did. And one pivotal instance for us was Black College Reunion, BCR.
Man.
That was just a godsend, because that was one place we had all of these different young people from all over the country. They gathered in one place. We went to Daytona Beach. After we left New Jersey, we drove back down. Just so happened it was going to be around April, the beginning of April, which was going to be Black College Reunion. We went down there and saturated that beach. Nobody left that beach without a button, a sticker, a T-shirt, or a cassette. We gave all the guys with the systems, we was giving it to them. With that whoop that is, came on that hunt with it. Man, they lost their mind. And after that, that was when it just really all changed for us.
They took our music back to their city. They were in one place. We flooded it. Bruh, let me tell you something. we did that in 93 with Woot That Is, 94 with Tucero, and 95 with Rodeo. And, bruh, it was just, I don't know, bruh. It was just those 3 years we marketed. We got out there ourselves, but we were passing out tapes ourselves, bruh, going from car to car, passing out Bro, how many t-shirts did we have, Carlos? We had thousands of t-shirts that we gave away.
And we just gave them away, you know what I'm saying? So we pretty much created a blueprint to market records, but just by getting out there doing the work, and we did it ourselves. We didn't have a street team. We was the street team. So
that was beautiful.
You know,
that was
so awesome. I'm using, man, we pretty much wrote a blueprint to market and to sell, you know, our style of bass music.
We look at that time, y'all, and that was something phenomenal because whether y'all know it or not, probably some of those t-shirts are worth some money now, especially with the way hip-hop has really been become a commodity in the game in terms of the monetary profit. Some of those promos you all have that y'all gave out are probably worth a lot of money. For our listeners out there, if you got some of that promo material, that could be worth a lot of money to this day.
You know what? My mama just gave Mike the shirt that we gave her back 30 years ago, bro. And Mike got that shirt. He got it from my mom.
No. She been gave it to me. It was just in the closet. It was like, I always had it. You know, she gave it to me a few years ago. And
right.
She say, well, this is one of the original t-shirts. I don't know. You know, I don't know. She didn't know she could style it with the shoes she got. Now, I don't know why she gave it to me, Carlos, but I took the shirt. And I still got it.
That's what's up.
Man.
I mean, tell everybody, you know, because we grew up in that era of it. One of my childhood memories that I was robbed from is that I never got to go to Freedom and I never got to go to Black Beach. So you all have to tell us those stories. What was it like with Freedom and Black Beach during that time in the 90s? We need to hear it from the niggas who was there. Y'all got to tell us that.
Oh my! I don't want to implicate myself in any crimes, so I'm gonna go ahead and give a disclosure. Nothing
okay.
that I say is it's all alleged.
It was a possibility that maybe it could have been.
You're right. But honestly, bro, it was just a time where, you know, it was just fun. It was innocent. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't all innocent, but what I'm saying is
it was
a different time, and the vibe was different, you know, in the world. The music reflected that. You know, it was, I don't know, man. It's just hard to explain, but that was just the golden age, man. And Black Beach Week, there was Freaknik, but also the music conferences like Jack the Raffle. I don't know if you guys ever had a chance. Jack the Rapper Man, that just totally changed my life because I remember being in a room with Jermaine Jackson, Vanessa Williams, Prince, and this was all at the Marriott Marquis downtown Atlanta in these exclusive music conferences. That was just like when you watch Straight Outta Compton and the scene where Ice Cube got jumped on when they was fighting those dudes at the music conference, I was there. That was the Jack the Rapper conference.
Mm-hmm.
So what really happened? What really happened in that situation from what y'all knew about that history and how that fight happened?
It was so many things going on because, again, Tupac was just getting down with Death Row. NWA was going through their thing. So, and I remember, and see, I'm not too much privy on what happened with Ice Cube and his people. You know, I'll let the music pick that, but I know that. You know, I witnessed the situation where Luke's camp and Death Row was going at it, and I watched Tupac throw trash cans and just really obliterate the whole lobby of the Marriott Marquis. And I stood up there and watched that brother do that. You know what I'm saying? Because again, and he was getting in with Death Row, and it was kind of chaotic at that time, but it wasn't getting to the point where, you know, people were losing their lives.
And that was something. And this is the greatest thing about doing shows like this because we get so much history where we didn't expect it. Because we always, because when we saw the Cowards in Compton video that Luke did about Death Row, we were all confused. Now, mind you, we young niggas back in the day, so it's like we watching BET, the only information we really have are the source magazines. I hadn't started reading that yet. I didn't start reading until 1994. So we really had no idea of what was going on because if there was some issues, it might get reported. But by the same token, we didn't know the impetus of where it all started. So when we saw the video, we were like, what? Luke and Death Row got in? She was like, how, Sway?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and Luke came back, and but we were like touring with all these guys. You know, we were doing shows with all of them, so it was just like at the end of the day, you know, we gonna ride with Florida. You know what I'm saying? You know, Luke put
Understood.
Up on our first
Understood.
Tour, and those guys are just near and dear to us. You know, we stand on their shoulders, but at the end of the day, it was just wild, and you know, and again, like I said, we didn't get to the point where people were losing their lives. And, you know, there was still a certain level of respect going on back then, you know. But, yeah, you know, we got a couple of Pac stories, you know what I'm saying? So, so, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, we just been blessed and fortunate.
Yeah, y'all want to share them, feel free. If not, we understand. Now, you all came from a city where it was notorious, you know, in terms of, you know, Miami, all of that. I mean, so you look at the Boobie Boys, you look at Triple C Cartel, Convertible Burt, Big Ike, you know.
We're from Jacksonville.
Okay, Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
North Florida, yeah, you know, they call
okay,
Jacksonville
okay,
South,
Miami,
Florida,
South, South Florida. South Florida.
We
right.
way up north.
Gotcha. Because it's always that designate, because y'all always are identified with that Miami based scene, but of course, Jacksonville is where y'all rep.
The genre we did was Miami based, but again, we had our Convertible Birds, we had our, you know, the Rick Rosses, we had all of that here in Jacksonville, because you got to understand, Jacksonville is a port city as well. Not only is Miami a port city, but Jacksonville is really one of the original ports, major ports in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with St. Augustine, you know, 20 minutes away, being the oldest city in the nation. So there's a lot of historical significance here in Jacksonville, and our river flows north. You know, not a lot of rivers do that. But
right.
Side of that, yeah, these cats up here was whamming too, you know. So we were living in the projects when the crack hit. I take that back. Right before crack really hit the projects, thank God, we were being put out of the project around that time. And we had to leave and go live with my grandmother. Thank God we got it there before crack really took hold. But we witnessed that whole thing, you know what I'm saying, man? And it was devastating to the community.
When you all look at how the game is today, because you all grew up and you were around Jacksonville, you were around Miami, you all were around where the shit really went down. Is you as OGs, as family men, as veterans, what do you all have to tell the younger generation today about what the streets really mean, and if you got a chance to get out the streets, to get out the streets and do something legit?
Well, what I want to say is the streets don't love nobody, bro. The streets don't love nobody. And right now, you know, I'm 56. And I would have never thought when I was in my 20s that I would I would still be healthy. I still got my knees. I still got my health. I still got my mind. I couldn't think to 50, right? But now that you're, you know, then when you get 50 or 40 or even 30, bruh, you got most of your life still to live. So them streets don't love nobody. Stay out of them, and just, bro, ain't nothing nice about them streets, bro. Ain't nothing nice about it at all.
I would say, go ahead.
Ain't no love in the heart of the city.
At all, you know. And again, you know, fortunately for us, you know, we had a praying grandmama. Lord, she was a praying grandma, you know, and just, you know, people that were, you know, put in our lives to help us get it. Like, we didn't do it by ourselves, you know. It was by the grace of God, man, and just the right timing, I think, you know. And again, we're grateful for the privilege to be able to really put some good music out, man, and to be here today to talk about it is definitely a blessing.
It's a blessing to have both of you
First off, I thank God for giving me life. Secondly, I thank, you know, my mother for being, for birthing me. Thirdly, I got to thank King and Sandman, because together when we do it off the cuff, we get to do shows like this to interview people like yourself. And this is one of the treasures we hold dear, because we're part of your history just as much as you all are part of ours. You all inspired us in terms of giving us the lessons and what we would take from those lessons to become journalists. You all have done so much for us that we can't thank you enough for. You know,
we appreciate it.
Thank you for the inspiration and the motivation. You all just didn't stop with one hit. You all had continuous hits. I mean, what was it like when y'all realized, like, yo, we really got something here?
Yeah. It was definitely like, you know what? We supposed to be here. You know what I'm saying?
No, Carlos, my defining moment, I remember I got off the road and we started doing 69 Boys album.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw you on Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
My career could have ended right then. I would have been happy. Then, when I saw you on Arsenio Hall, it wasn't like, oh, I should have been there. I was like, damn, I did a song that's on Arsenio Hall, and my brother is. Yeah, bro, that's
priceless. And
that was it.
Yeah, and it changed our life because Luke actually saw the show too. Luke said he was sitting up in his bed, and we were in the lobby. It was 95 South, Luke, H-Town, and Silk. That was a dope show. That was a dope tour, man. And he had other groups like JT Money. I think he had Disco Rick on the road as well. But those were the dopest show. But he sits in the lobby of this hotel in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he talk about how he sit in his bed, and he saw us perform in Arsenio Hall. He said, man, I had to tell my road manager, which at the time was Michael Hoff. He said, Hoff, call them boys and see where they at. Well, I'm going to put them boys on the road. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, we was on Luke's tour.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
I mean, the party scenes, the shows. I mean, what was that like with the energy during that time with the crowd, especially during that period?
Yeah, man, people.
And back then, it was like, sometimes we had 9 shows a week, bro, every day, 2 on Friday, 2 on Saturday. So we, dude, I done been in so many cities, I can't even tell you what the city looks like, bro. I can't even tell you what the city looks like because we was in and out so fast at times, bro.
Yeah.
We're just in and out. So it was, we didn't have time. I remember once I got off the road with 95 South and we would start recording 69 Boys, my brother would bring home one of those big duffel bags, like army bags, and duck clothes on the floor for my mama to wash because he had to, like, he would leave. He'd take, okay, we got 7 shows. He wouldn't come back for another 3 weeks, so he had to buy clothes out there on the road. Bro, it was sick, bro. It was sick, fast, and furious.
Yeah, it was a blur. It was a blur, bro.
Man, I mean, when you all look at it from how you all were moving today and how the game is today, what changes do you see in how the music is marketed, how the artist's temperament is, and how the public just responds to records in terms of how they attach themselves to how the records have a chance to grow?
Well, for me, you know, it's a different day, you know, because we did everything pre-internet. We didn't have social media. We just didn't have all of the resources young people have today, you know. So the marketing, you just got to figure out this new wave, you know. And I struggle with it as a vet in the industry, you know. Things changing so fast, so you have to keep up with the technology. You got to keep up with these sites and all of these different things and social media and so you just got to be consistent. You got to really put forth a huge effort into really creating an online presence, you know. And I think that's the difference in, you know, in this time, you know. But definitely, you know, for me, it's all about just, you know, trying to create something that's next level and, you know, and marketing it as such, you know. So for me, yeah, we just got to keep
grinding. Right, but you got to understand, Carlos, that, you know, most people, you know, like I was saying earlier, they don't look at the songs they're making to be eating 30 years later. We're still eating. You know,
right.
We're still eating. You know what I'm saying? You know, when I look at my royalty checks and my writer checks, I'm getting paid from Peloton because Peloton is using our music when you use their exercise bike. They're using our music. So it's like, bruh, you just got to make timeless music. And I don't think the new artists, they think about that. They think about that because 30 years will come. And, I mean, what are you going to do? Yep. You're going to drive for Uber? I mean, I don't know, you know? So just make timeless music and you will always eat, bro.
Yep.
Yeah, they don't focus on that aspect. They just focus on the same aspect of it. They don't focus on leaving a legacy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One thinking day about, you're not it, famous, but that money still got to be rolling in.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the wild thing, y'all, because when we look at because what you all did, it was based off of tremendous talent, an understanding of your audience, and just a mentality of we're in this to make the best music that we can. And those tenets, that foundation that you all built your career upon still stand tall as a monument to magnificence to this day. You know, when we look at what's going on, and this is, we're all from the same generation, so we understand what it means, you as an artist, to how you had to work at your craft to really get it out there, and us from how we learned it in terms of listening to the radio and how it was marketed. But a lot of what's happening now, and we've seen this, is that a lot of the younger artists, the new artists coming in, we love social media. It's helped us tremendously with this show. But what's happened is, in the wrong way, you got a lot of artists rapping who really shouldn't be rapping, but they have an outlet to do it and to put it out right away. You know, like the old saying goes, it's like I would, you know, like they said on the meme online, I've missed the days when people who couldn't rap did it.
Right.
Right.
You know, but and everybody is looking at this as a passing fad, and that's what's eroding the culture to a degree, in terms of the culture will always live forever and it will always be rich. But to me, it becomes a caricature, even parodied in the worst way, when you have people who know damn well they got no business picking up the microphone. And, you know, they do what they do, whether they make trash songs or they have even trashier antics to try to bring attention to the fact that they can't make good songs. And they sell a lot of not self-destructive images. You know, and it's like,
yeah.
Dude, that our era, we didn't do that. We just did it.
Yeah. 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 We live in some strange times. And I just know that, you know, there's no standards anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was because again, like I said, you know, a lot of stations back in the day were conservative with Whoop, There It Is, and that's how, you know, the other group was able to get their record, you know, recognized, and that's a whole other conversation is the controversy with the two records, you know what I'm saying? But
right, right. We'll have y'all,
you know,
back on to talk about it. Y'all coming back on to talk about it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
No, it's all good. Yeah, but I mean, when you think about it in terms of the controversy and how those things went, when you look at how a lot of these artists are talking about it, I mean, you all came from an era where you made fun music that was partying for everybody. Now we see, you know, niggas nowadays, they making records talking about how they're going to roll up on somebody and smoke them. I mean, you got niggas making fun about the dead homies. It's like, you know, like, yeah. I did this. So they
acting angry
like,
energy, my brother. It's angry energy. It's been like that for years. It's a reflection of where society is at.
Nobody, you know,
yeah.
people ain't getting that big money like they was before. Because, you know, back in the 90s, niggas was getting that big money, you know. The value
yeah.
of the dollar was really high.
It was, you know what I'm saying? And again, today, in today's time, you know, these young guys, they after that bag, you know, they'll rap about whatever's. And again, we got to look at the industry, too, who support that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying, man? Because, again,
right.
these labels supporting this stuff, and it's murder music. It's toxic, and it's just really doing something different to our youth. And that's the sad part about it. You know what I'm saying? Because I come from a time where being a junkie was not cool.
Right.
right.
Now,
right.
they making it cool to be a junkie.
Right.
And what's crazy... And as we came up in that era, I mean, you know, we tell the kids, we listen to Loop, N.W.A., Schoolie D, Ice-T, Ice Cube mm-hmm. when he went solo. Hell, the Menace to Society soundtrack alone was serious. But it's
right.
Like, we also listen to R&B. We listen to SWV. We listen to Y'all. We listen to Silk, you know, Universal Nubian Voices. I'm going deep in the bag. Wendy Moten. Drama. I mean, we listened to every Shantae Moore. It was a balance, so we weren't inundated
yeah.
with one. It balanced it out.
Yeah.
And to see some of the youngins today, it's like all they think is drill. I'm going to shoot somebody. We are never going to be anti-hip hop. That's not. We love this culture. We came up in it. We're children of this. All of us are. But
right.
I think as black men, as black people, our thing is. When you listen to too much of something, it can get in your mind. It's just like if you watch
yeah.
too many violent movies, you know, if you watch too much porn, you know, not that we have anything against porn or violent movies, but it's like even then you have to have a balance of doing other things. When you,
yeah,
it's never healthy to just sit down and you're just drowning in something all day, every day, and you don't know nothing else.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
And music is the way they inject it into our souls because, again, we are rhythmic people. We black.
Mm-hmm.
We on a different vibration. Vibration is numbers, and
right.
that's why you
know, right.
we are directly connected to the beat. You know what I'm saying? And with the right beats and the right tones, man, they can inject all kind of toxicity into our brains. You know what I'm saying? And that's why music is so important for them to control because they know that we are rhythmic people. And, you know, we walk with rhythm. We talk with rhythm. You know, rhythm is who we are, you know, because we are directly connected, bro. And so at the end of the day, yeah, so they got us with our music, and we just got to find a way to take it back. But you know what? It's a rebirth coming. You know, and I feel
Absolutely.
It, you know.
Absolutely.
I'm feeling more creative in what I'm doing. I got a project I'm working on called Black Licorice. You know, it's going to be serious. You either love it or hate it, brother. You know, and it's going to be an acquired taste. You know, just like I was always the kid going for the black jelly beans in the bowl because I just thought it was weird taste, and I just always liked it. But I also understood it is an acquired taste, and you either love it or hate it. And that's why, you know, with this project I'm working on, it's a lot of me. I'm giving you the real, you know, this ain't Daddy Black. This is Carlos Spencer, you know, is you know, coming from a different place. And I just can't wait to share it with the world.
Before we wrap this up, because, you know, we almost out of time, you care to talk about any up-and-coming shows you have going on this coming fall?
Yeah, October 6th, we're in North Augusta, South Carolina. That's going to be a dope show celebrating the 50th anniversary of hip-hop. We got Dougie Fresh on the show, 69, Splack Pack, Force Indeed. We got our homegirls This and That coming. There's going to be a few more artists there as well. Then on the 14th, we're here in Jacksonville. We're doing a TEDx convention, which is an affiliate of TED Talks, which is a huge speaking platform that's worldwide. We're doing that in Jacksonville the 28th. We're going to be in Birmingham, Alabama. That's going to be another great show, but you will definitely be able to see the advertisement on our Instagram. So, yeah, y'all, if you can make it, cool. If not, we're going to rock it out for you anyway.
Man, look, before we go, we have to say thank you, thank you. thank you so much for this. We're going to have y'all back for part two whenever you all are ready to do it, because we got so much more history to cover.
Yes.
Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Okay, well, you can find me at Mike 95 South. That's Mike, M-I-K-E, M-I-K-E, 95 South. Also, the official 95 South. You can, that's one of our Instagrams. And call us, what is your personal one?
My personal is The Real 95 South. And you'll see the logo, the black and white logo, and that's more so my personal page. But, yeah, man, thank you guys for having us, brother. We were grateful. You know, I don't know if our Angie sent you guys another track we had called Miss Booty Queen, but, you know, if you guys don't have it, I'll get it to you. But that's one of our newest records we're working on. And if you guys play it, you guys will be the first ones that ever play it on your show. So you guys got it first.
We appreciate y'all. Look for Off the Cuff Radio, King Air Productions, and T-Max in VA. We're all going to be hitting you on your IGs and everything. And thank you so much. We can't thank y'all enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. You'll see us again, brother. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate
all right,
you.
Man. Y'all take care.
All right.
All right. You too, bro.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Brother King, take us out of here, bro.